Hello, everyone, and welcome to this podcast. My name is Betul Jabbour, and joining me today is Tom Nankolis.
Hi, Betul. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. And how are you doing today?
Very good, thank you. Very good.
Good, good, good. Well, today's podcast is called Interior Design with Tom Nankolis, and we've got a jam-packed couple of episodes for you, actually, where we're going to be going through a lot of different topics, starting from designing in the future, looking to latest trends, how we can become more sustainable, the mushy side of and psychology of interior design is like how I like to describe it, designing for wellness and the global design influencers. We've got a lot of things that we're going to be talking about today with Tom. But first of all, Tom, just give us a bit of background about what you do.
Thanks, Betul. I've been designing interiors for around 20 years. I graduated in 2003. Most of my career has been spent working for architectural practices and interior design companies, designing mostly commercial projects. And then about the last 6 or 7 years, I've been teaching, training, interior design courses and similar software courses. I've set up my own small company recently, so I like to focus on more the education and training side of things, but still have a bit of a focus on interior design projects too. That's about it for me.
Okay, so with creative design, and you know, the way that you've developed from going from from in practice to then to go into training and consultancy, what made you go for the transition from going from, you know, full time interior designing on projects to then passing on that knowledge to others?
I think when I worked for companies, I always really enjoyed the mentoring side of things when we'd work with graduate designers or newish designers. And we'd help them along. I remember when I first started my career, I worked with brilliant designers who were so kind. I'd never, for instance, used AutoCAD. And then my first day in work, I was told I need to learn AutoCAD and 3D Studio Max. And it was only through the people around me, the colleagues, through their generosity, sharing their time, their experience, that I was able to learn those. So I've always enjoyed that side of it. So I thought I'd give more of the tutoring, personal tuition a go. And I find it really emotionally rewarding. I still enjoy interior design, but I find that you can get such a short impact, maybe just work with a student for an hour or a day, you can make a real difference. So I think that's where it's come from, the kind of personal enjoyment of it and then satisfaction of seeing other designers feel happy in their work.
I love how you filled in the gap in the markets where, you know, a graduate goes into work and it's a big shock because you're expected to perform the way a person who's worked for 30 odd years next to you, you know, you're expected to get to that quality work straight away. But how do you do that? You know, you have to kind of build yourself up to do that. I think that's really great what you're doing at Refine Creative. And I think, you know, you're an inspiration to many people who are going to be listening to this podcast today. So, okay, let's get into our first topic then. So designing for the future. Tell me a bit more about the exploration of, you know, intersection of interior design, sustainability and technology with futuristic concepts, Tom.
Yeah, it's really fascinating, especially when we look at environmental sustainability and technology together, because it can often go in such different directions. You get so many different perspectives, so many different viewpoints, especially on environmental sustainability. It's something I'm quite passionate about. But at the same time, I feel it's something that I spend more time learning. I'll know less about it. It seems to become more and more confusing. It's such a huge subject and so many different theories, so many different viewpoints that it can be quite hard to pin down. Something that I like to share with students is focusing on longevity of interior design projects. So when we're meeting a client, for instance, writing the brief, we discuss how long the client wants their design to last for. Because, for instance, if we're designing an office and the company may be thinking that it'll last for at least 10 years and then maybe look at another refit, the technology that we put into that office then either needs to be adaptable and interchangeable, or it needs to last for 10 years. Very often, for instance, if we're using current smart technology, it's probably got a shelf life of around 3 years until it becomes redundant or old-fashioned.
Yeah, it's something that we don't really think about kind of moving forward when we're looking at a design just naturally. You know, if we're fitting out our home or something, we don't think, oh, this is going to last this 5 years or this is going to last. Yeah. Instead, you just do it thinking, oh, wow, this is it.
That's it. And we've always got an eye on trying to minimise the waste that our profession creates. We understand we create a vast amount of waste at the moment and we're trying to improve on that. So, yeah, one aspect we can focus on or discuss at least is the longevity of projects and then reusing items or reusing the maybe outdated technology or sharing it with others.
So how do you get to choose which materials and which technology is kind of more eco-friendly when you're looking at design and evaluating what you're trying to do to become, to allow our homes and our designs to be more kind of smart and more integrated and innovative? How do you kind of look to see for those materials and technologies?
So with the materials specifically, from an environmental perspective, we'd look at where they're sourced from, how far they have to be transported to site. So depending where the site is in the world that we're designing, we'd always want to try and find materials close as possible to that site to reduce potential for pollution caused by transportation. And then also looking at materials from renewable sources. So I appreciate some of these things we've done for a long time or forever, things like the Forestry Stewardship Council, where we know we need to specify timbers from managed forests rather from elsewhere. So we know then the timber's going to be replenished and it's more like it becomes like a wood factory rather than pillaging from rainforests. So we can always focus on the renewable aspect and the location, and then also the lifespan of the materials. If we can pick materials that are going to last for a long time, rather than something that's going to look great on handover day, but maybe in a year or two is going to start looking quite damaged. Appreciate there can be a financial impact with that, because then often we need to have a greater outlay on those materials that are going to last longer. But there's so many great materials we can use, so many different timbers and cork, for instance. We've seen a good kind of renaissance of cork at the moment, which had a little bit of a poor reputation with a lot of consumers, a lot of clients for a while. Maybe because of those lovely dance floors from the 1970s, I'm not sure. But we've seen as such a sustainable product now, or bamboo as well. Bamboo can grow so quickly. So we can farm bamboo, we can harvest it quite quickly. And if we compare that to things like tropical hardwood, which have still got a beautiful aesthetic and a great kind of demand from clients, we have to kind of share our knowledge, our experience with the clients if they don't already know that, knowing that if these timbers are taking maybe 50 years to grow and they're not coming from renewable sources, then maybe we shouldn't be going there at all. But we can just get a look alike. You know, we can look at different products that are made to look like those, so we don't have to damage those products themselves.
Absolutely.
And then, yeah, so it's always different with every different project, every different client. We can always look at things from different perspectives to maybe try and match the client's wishes, the client's taste, and the function and the time and place where we're designing.
You've hit the nail on the head there, to be honest. Basically, when you know, driving around and you go to these kind of new complexes, new houses, etc., if we twist this and instead of from an interior perspective, if we look at it from an architectural perspective, you know, the materials, when you have a look at the timber that's been used or the render that's been used, something that was new, you know, last year and this year's already kind of been exposed to the weather and nature, we see how this has kind of affected the material longevity and how basically, you know, that the materials start to erode or start to not look how they should have been just 1 year on. And I think that's definitely something that, you know, if we pay more attention to the materials being used, where it's sourced, like you mentioned, and the longevity of it and how we can incorporate it into our designs and think about it. I know the cost up front might be something slightly different, but at the same time, you know, sourcing materials from which are more eco-friendly is definitely something that can help us with the design life of that. So Tom, with latest design trends, how is it that you can incorporate these kind of natural materials such as fast-growing bamboo, etc., into the design trends without it being boring and without it being just the same design everywhere? How do you incorporate a bit of personality to it?
Yes, we try and learn as much as possible from our clients. Often when we meet them to discuss the client brief, we find out about their aspirations and their preferred tastes in design. So during that stage, we'll often share lots of imagery of other designers' work. So for instance, if a client tells me they love one period or one type of design, their perception of that period might be quite different to ours. So if we look at imagery together, we can really understand each of us' words far more. So for instance, if we talk about Art Nouveau, their perception of Art Nouveau interiors might be different from a designer's. So if we look at those images together, we can make sure that we know really what the client's after. And then we can consider materials where we can achieve a look that we believe is going to match our client's preferred aesthetic. So we can always design using form. No matter what the material is, we can change the form. We can change the texture. We can change the surface finish, even changing the colours with some dyes and stains and so on. So there's so much we can play with to add different types of creativity. And the layout itself, we can make the layout suit whatever kind of architecture, whatever kind of site and client demands we have. So we can always try and be playful and creative with the materials to make sure that they're in trend in the client's eyes. Because one thing I think interior designers, great interior designers do, is almost bypass trends. We get so many annual trends in the interior design industry and appreciate they need to be there for manufacturers. They need to make and sell new products every year. Therefore, there's going to be, they may be promoting annual trends. We get them from colour theorists, colour companies like Pantone as well. But if you think that these interior design projects are typically lasting much more than 1 year, we want our clients to feel good in those spaces far more than 1 year. So we don't want them to be similar to high fashion, where something can be extremely popular for a short amount of time and then be deemed ugly or be deemed out of fashion.
It's not sustainable either, keeping that's up with it. You know, the yearly trends or the latest on high demand. So that's actually a perspective that I never thought interior designers look from. You know, I always thought you do keep up with the latest fashions, the latest trends, and on point with them, rather than looking at it from the client's perspective and making sure they feel happy for longer than how long the trend should be out there. So that's really interesting. It's almost like, you know, the sympathetic side of the interior designer coming out and be putting themselves in the client's shoes and saying, no, actually, this is the colour theme of now. But I think if we do a diversion and go into this way and utilise these Pantones or these colours or, you know, these RGBs, whatever you want to call them, you know, if we utilise that, then you will have more out of your design for a longer time.
You're right, what you're saying, that interior designers do need to be aware of current trends, because when we meet a client, they can discuss anything they want with us. So we need to be aware. If we're not aware of them, we might not look informed to the client, but we can still try to, like you're saying, promote different ideas that may not just be following trends. And a good interior designer or any good creative can make a trend just by coming up with one great project. And then we'll see from internet research that so many people will take influence from a successful project.
So educate us then, Tom, what is the latest design trends at the moment?
Well, yeah, that's a good question. I think something we're seeing a lot of is ventilation or air quality is one aspect. Appreciate it's not one of the most kind of coolest or the most kind of visual things to discuss, but especially since the pandemic and home working and people being made to spend more time indoors and less connections with nature, making sure the spaces that we work in, that we live in, that we play in, have good indoor air quality. And we've seen it a bit from research recently from the Guardian newspaper had a few years back now, articles on wood burners. And it's a real shame there's so many consumers, so many members of the public love the feeling of warmth you get from a wood burner, and appreciate they can look and feel great, but unfortunately they do reduce indoor and outdoor air quality significantly. We've had some similar research in America, North America, with gas stoves. So gas stoves in and gas hobs have always been considered maybe the best way of cooking at home for the quality of food, quality of cooking. But then also now we're getting some kind of research that shows us the poor effects on the indoor air quality. In fact, so much so that in the UK now, landlords are made to put carbon monoxide CO detectors, I think they are, near to gas hobs. So there's evidence there. If that's a recommendation or it's enforced for landlords to do that, it shows that there's things inside the rooms that may not be so good for us. And appreciate all products when we buy them, including our clothing, have VOCs, volatile organic compounds, is it? And I think these can disperse through time, but we see this a lot. I think wall coverings is another example based on the air quality, where we had paints and wallpapers on walls for so long, and now we're seeing so many natural plasters, and natural plasters can give a different feeling, different environment to paints, so we get a texture on a wall rather than just a colour. Then also the materials that they're made from can be far more natural. Therefore, they cause less damage to the indoor air quality. But I appreciate with paints, that negative aspect to the indoor air quality is only a temporary thing.
This is real news to me. So whoever's listening to this as well, you know, if we're being educated on, just down to the material that we use on our walls and having a lot of people listening to this will be landlords as well, and having that idea of changing the gas stove to maybe an induction or you know, an electric cooker. I think all of these pointers, these are pointers that we work with every day. These are materials that we deal with every day. And sometimes, you know, yeah, not everyone gets an interior designer to design their home. And these are things that we're not aware of unless we go out to research it like you have. You know, the research that's being conducted all around the world and understanding what we're using every day. You know, the paint behind me, is that sustainable? The paint behind me, how did it get there? The paint behind me, is that, you know, going to be degrading? Is that going to reduce my air quality? It's not really something we think about in the home. In the home, we just think, oh, just open the windows, change the air, that's it. It's all fine, you know? And a lot of people also use, you know, incense burners or they use other kind of materials in the house that will also affect the air quality, hence affecting the quality of how you feel within your surroundings, isn't it?
Coming up next on Optimize et al.
So going on to our next theme with Tom on interior designs, with regards to creating space makeovers, do you have any inspiring stories, real life stories of where you've changed something and the client has just been so thankful?
Yeah, it's probably one of the enjoyable parts of interior design. You often do get very emotional responses from your clients, from your work, or from the team's work, and hopefully they're positive. So sometimes it might mean we've not listened well enough, we've not dealt with the brief, may not be strong enough. But also we find that as we go through a design process, when we guide clients through a design process, often a client's opinions and thoughts will change dramatically. Because if we're doing a good job, I think often we can teach them about design as they're teaching us about their work as we go through the process. I think our mood changes the way we design, just like our designs can change people's mood. I don't believe personally in good taste and bad taste. We all have our own preferences, our own visual, our own aesthetic preferences.
Have you ever been into an environment, whether it's a school, a house, a restaurant, whatever, and you walked in and you thought, who done the interior design for this? This is awful. Have you had that experience? You must have had that experience.
I have.
Is there any kind of DIY and budget-friendly designs that we can do as, you know, homeowners, or we can do as someone who's renting a property, or someone who's just got a room in a university hall? What can we do to make, you know, where we are much better, but on a budget?